This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
All right, welcome in. This is the Stick and Hack Show, the most sophisticated golf show in the free world. That's Stick Mike Ryan. I'm the hack, Adam Grubb, and I don't want to just call you a stick anymore, Mike Ryan. You are, in fact, club champion. Right?
I am.
And it's exciting, and I don't know how you handle the pressure, and I don't know how you handle the accolades that I'm sure you're getting on a daily basis, not only from your family, friends, colleagues, people probably don't even know, as you walk down the street as a club champion.
Hey, I had a good weekend.
Right, there it is.
I played well.
That's the stick mentality. I played well. If that were me, I would have had everybody in that clubhouse buying me drinks, buying me food for a year.
Okay, I'm up for that.
Right, I'm sure you are. But you're not going to do that. You're just going to ho-hum it along, club champion, not a big deal.
Yeah.
But it was fun, though, right?
It was.
It's fun to win. It's fun to win.
It's always fun to win.
All right, first up here is Tiger Woods. Your boy withdrew from the Northern Trust, the first leg of the FedEx Cup. He is no longer playing, but he held to his "I only play four times a year" rule. He's like, oh, my God, I must have miscounted. Here, this is my fifth time playing this year. I'm going to shut it down. Is that a big deal? Oblique strain? What's his deal?
I don't know. He is just, it's like he's become fragile at this point. Right. I don't understand
it. It's like a 68-year-old man who can't get out of the car. Yeah.
And I mean, he's made, you know, the statement that, you know, this kind of is what it is at this point. I'm not going to be healthy all the time. I'm going to have weeks where I just can't make it through a tournament. I don't think I would have thought it'd be this often, but it feels like it's a lot more than it should be.
But there are people withdraw all the time from tournaments, and people have injuries. I know that most don't realize that golfers can get injured, but they can. There's a lot happening on your body during a swing. So just him getting hurt is not a big deal, except for the fact that he had this comeback, he has been hurt, and he's Tiger Woods. That's right. Why this is new. Somebody withdrawing from a tournament, not normally big news.
Yeah, I would say that, but Tiger's obviously Tiger, and with all the past that he's had, we're going to keep hearing about it all the time.
Can you imagine the meetings at NBC when that news comes out? Like, oh my God!
I wonder if they have like a red phone that's like the Tiger phone.
Tiger's out. Okay, 30% decline in ratings and a $200 million dip in sponsorship fees.
Yeah.
All right. Slow play continues to be a major, major point of contention and conversation. We talked about this last episode, but it hasn't stopped. The discussions have not slowed down at all about slow play.
Right.
And in fact, it's actually gotten worse. Where now players are starting to point out individual players that are causing the issues. And it's the mad scientist Bryson DeChambeau, who is the latest victim of this slow play. So explain what happened. Talk a little bit about the putt.
I watched the video on this thing, and it was pretty egregious. What I thought was probably the most hilarious out of all of it was the fact that he took 2 minutes, and then he didn't even hit the hole.
Missed it by 4 feet. Yeah, probably one of the worst, statistically one of the worst putts that's ever been hit. And
it was bad.
I thought I had several of those, but he had the worst putt. So he took 2.5 minutes to read this putt, and it was not a long putt. It was 8 feet, maybe, right?
Right.
And he made the statement that it was on a little knob or something like that. The announcer had said on there, after all that, this should move right to left a little bit.
Yeah.
And he just pushed it straight right, missed it by 3 feet.
Yeah.
But you see Jordan Spieth, you see other people. There's a picture of Jordan Spieth looking at his imaginary watch. He had no watch on.
Yeah.
And he was looking at his watch as DeChambeau was walking around trying to do this thing. But so now players were saying, hey, this was obviously you.
Yeah.
You took 2.5 minutes to hit a 6-foot putt. What is the problem? And then he came back and was like, whoa, hold on a second.
Right. He was basically like, you know, that's a very small subset of the shots that I'm taking. He said it's, you know, that's like the 1% where it takes me that long to take a shot. Yeah. But they had some other video of him on another like wedge approach shot that he had. It was like he walked off the shot. It was like 70 yards. But the funny thing was I watched the video of it, and the announcer on there, he already knew the yardage. So I'm like, well, if the if he knows the yardage, and I doubt he stepped it off.
Right. And he's played 5,000 rounds in his life. Right. He knows what 60 yards looks like.
Yeah. It's...
Now, they're trying to hit it to a spot, so it is different than for a hack who's out there who's just trying to get it near the green. Hey, 60 yeah. yards, fine. 60 yards to me is not 60.8, yeah. right? It makes sense to them, but it's crazy. And so what has happened now is that there's this spotlight on the slow play, and the USGA is actually coming under fire now at this point
right.
because they're saying, look, it's not just – and players are saying, those are the rules. What I can take as much time as I want within the rules today,
yeah.
and that's what I'm doing. So is this a USGA problem?
Well, I don't think it's just a USGA problem. I think it's a USGA PGA Tour problem, both. I mean, they both have a role to play in it. You've got to have some better definition in the actual rules that would govern it somewhat. And then, I mean, the PGA Tour is probably going to be the one that has to actually enforce it because they're their events.
And they said that some of the PGA players said younger players and hacks and sticks alike who are just golfers,
yeah,
they're learning from us. They're watching us play just like you watch Steph Curry hit threes. Now all of a sudden the 12-year-old mm-hmm. is out there bombing threes because that's how you play NBA basketball. Mm-hmm. That's how they are looking at golf. It is very systematic and annoying, annoyingly slow.
Yeah, well, and I think so DeChambeau is an easy target just because of all the
because of his nuance. Hat. He has a dumb hat.
That's part of
it. Am I wrong? His hat's dumb.
Yes.
He needs a stick and hack.
I'm not a fan. Yeah. He does. He has so many other things that he does, and the way he approaches the game is so much more analytical, I think, than anybody that he's such an easy target.
Right.
So is it warranted? I don't know. I'm not out there on tour with him every week. But if you see those clips and, you know, comments I've heard even from, so like Justin Thomas, he said, you know, Bryson's a slow player. You know, I'm not trying to single him out, but he is a slow golfer. So
I'm not trying to single him out, but I just said his
but
name.
I'm going to, I know.
on Golf Channel.
But he, you know.
Well, the baseball is actually this year alone, and I love baseball.
Yeah.
This is their first year that they were toying and tinkering with a pitch clock in spring training, where it starts at 20 seconds, and then the batter has to be in the box within 5 seconds left, and then they got to make the pitch. And why not? I mean, yeah. Baseball is the other sport that is incredibly slow that people right. say is losing its luster because of how long it takes and that mm-hmm. people don't want to go sit out there and watch something for 3.5 hours or 4 hours on TV. Golf, that could be a bigger problem than we know.
Yeah, it's something they're going to have to address it in some manner. I don't know what it's going to end up being, if that's a shot clock or not. And, you know, as I thought about it more, I don't know if a shot clock is the answer or not. But I think there are things they can do on tour outside of a shot clock that would probably help.
That's what they came out today with a statement that said, hey, there's also a lot of people walking
right.
with, you know, we got the galleries and then we got the movement. Yep. And we got all this other stuff, yep. right? So there's other things. Yep. So slow play is not going to be is going to continue to be a topic. And I think the entire rest of these playoffs, you're going to hear
yeah.
more and more about that. And as the year goes on.
Yep.
All right, we move on to the conversation. This is the science and technology of golf, Mike. And there is nothing that I think is more exciting and then in a game to see actual advancement of science bringing a new level right. of play to a sport that was hickory sticks and I don't know what did they what kind
yes,
of
yes they had hickory sticks
right and what
shafts
the
shafts
thank
yes.
you and then the balls were made out of like goose feathers and tar
I don't remember
it I think it's that like I think it's that yeah, goose it feathers like and
tar. A gutta ball I think is what right. they called them before right.
and now yeah. we are at the point now where there's ball fitting, there's club fitting, there's yep. there's this whole other thing. Is the technology in golf today where it's going to stay for several years, or do you continue to see technology change the face of the PGA and of golf in general?
I think it's going to continue to change things. I don't know that it's going to be necessarily like distance and that type of thing. I think at some point that may be like diminishing returns.
We've kind of topped out,
but I think you'll probably start to see some things with putters. You've already started to see some things there where they're going to have some new technology that I think that may help things. But, you know, I think it's from a science and technology standpoint, it helps the average golfer more than anybody, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you get up to the tour level, it's just you're tweaking things so much that it's just you're trying to squeeze every last ounce of performance out of the equipment. But
I think it's those higher handicaps that all of a sudden are getting 10 to 15 extra yards on their shots, or they are seeing spin for the first time ever because of the grooves on the face of the club. Equipment does matter, and understanding what it can do for your game is important. What I think right now is strange is this data push. Okay, so data and stats and analytics are everywhere around us, and that's what's pushing most of business decisions today. Would be that.
Yep.
There are a couple data points in golf that I think are important: fairways and regulation, which means that if it's a par four, that you're on the fairway or your greens in regulation.
Yes.
Greens in regulation. You know, every now and then. The hack mentality comes out.
It is.
The greens in regulation
is
if it's a par four, you're on the green in two.
Yeah.
You're in regulation, and now you can two putt for par, right? Yeah. Fairways hit would be that when you drive it, it's in the fairway, rough, right?
Yep.
And then number of putts.
Yep.
So how many putts does it take you to get the ball in the hole collectively throughout a round? Now, those are the only three stats for me that I've ever even known existed.
For the average golfer, I think those are the only three that really matter, to be honest. I see all of these other analytics that are out there around strokes gained and blah, blah, blah. And all
which I don't
stuff,
know what,
which
that, what does that mean.
I don't really either, to be honest. I don't really care. Even as a stick, I just don't care.
Club Champ doesn't care, everybody. Newsflash. Club Champ does not care about strokes gained. It doesn't make any sense.
I care how many fairways I hit. I care how many greens I hit. I care how many putts I have.
Do you keep those stats? Really, do you write
not
it down?
Really. I'll look back on if I have a good or bad round, and maybe just in my mind kind of think back through the round.
Which is crazy to even think that that somebody could do that.
Why?
Well, because if I look back at my round, and it might be easier for me to think of fairways hit because it's like two. And it's by happenstance because I topped it, right, you know, 10 yards into the fairway. But to go back, Tiger does that a lot. Tiger remembers every shot that he's ever hit, and he can go through them one by one, telling you the yardage and the thing. That is crazy to me. But you could go back and around and say, okay, I hit 12 of 18 or 12 of 16 fairways.
Yep.
And that's completely doable for
me. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I do it all the time. I'll be sitting in the bar having a beer.
Counting your
fairways.
In my
mind, I'm thinking, I'm not sitting there like, right?
Everybody, gather around. We're going to count fairways together.
The sticks analytics. Let's do this.
We're going to count fairways. I need everybody's attention, and I need a pencil that works.
It's not a out loud exercise.
All right,
it's a
little bit better.
It's an internal monologue, if you will.
But I do like that. I like that scene a lot. So should players keep stats in their round? Is that an important thing? And if so, what could a higher handicap learn from that? What can they take away from the data that is part of our game today?
I think for higher handicaps, it definitely helps because it at least gives you something to look at and say, here are the areas that I need to improve.
Right.
And so you can see, you know, in front of you on paper, here's where I'm good, here's where I'm bad, here's where I'm indifferent, so that you can, you know, structure your practicing habits accordingly.
Sometimes the rounds too, especially with higher handicaps, it is so different from round to round on what is working. So it's maybe one round they're hitting great fairways. The next round they're all greens in regulation. The third round they can't putt, right?
Yeah.
So
it's a little bit of whack-a-mole, I'm sure.
Right, yeah, I'm sure. But at one point you can say, okay, this is a round I put it all together and I shot a great round and here's why. And then you have something to attribute the great play to and not just luck, but these three things I'm supposed to do, I was able to do. And I've seen guys write down their scores, and their scorecard looks like John Nash from A Beautiful Mind at the end of the whole thing. But they've got all these scribbles and all these numbers and all these things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, what does it matter? Right. You're going to shoot a 94. We're good, right? Just put it in the thing. But it matters to them because they do want to get better. So for those hacks that want to get better, that's huge.
And some people, I'm sure they get kind of a kick out of that anyways.
Right.
I'm sure it's fun for some guys. But for me, I don't care that much.
And so the training, talking about those that have that will to get better. Everybody wants to get better at some point in their golfing career. And then some are just like, okay, this is where I'm at, and now I'm just going to go enjoy the game. Yep. But there are some certain people that want to get better, so they do they train, they practice, and they figure out how to get better at this game. And there are so many training aids out there today and practice aids. It's almost like the people that sell all the lotions and the potions. Yes. You know, the multi-level marketing.
Yes, MLMs.
MLMs. Yeah. At any point, there's a new one out there that you're supposed to buy.
Yeah.
And I think we're a day away from somebody having a house party, and the golfers have to go over there, and they have to look at some new putting thing, and we have to have some cheese and crackers. And
hey, there's an idea.
Crappy wine. Yes. It is. Hey, we'll do that
stick and hack MLM. Let's do it.
Yes. Oh my! I can hear the brain trust at Stick and Hack worldwide headquarters going crazy right now. So there are a lot of training aids. Are there ones that are specifically designed and that you think could help a golfer go and break into that 90, get a better swing, putt better? Is there anything out there that you like?
I think there's simple ones. Like, to me, an alignment stick is probably the number one thing that I think is a good tool to have, just because, I mean, I can't tell you how many times, even myself, that I may be out there and I feel like I'm shoving shots or I'm pulling shots, and then I just look at my alignment and I'm just aimed there.
Right.
And it's like, oh.
And those are typically on most driving ranges, and you never know really outside of just throwing it down on your feet. But if they have several of them, there are little pathways you can make, and there's things that you can do with an alignment stick that is outside of just putting it near your feet. But rule number one and lesson number one there is just, am I aimed right?
Yeah.
Because if you don't know that, then you just think everything goes right. So then you start to correct yourself and you start to correct your grip and the head and all this stuff, and then it messes with your mind.
Yeah, you can create all kinds of other problems that are, you know, symptoms of something as simple as alignment.
Right.
Like I've done it before plenty of times where I'm like screwing around with my grip and, you know, my swing path and trying to figure out what I'm doing. And then I just go back and I throw an alignment stick down there and look at it. And I'm like, oh, that was actually,
that's very frustrating.
Should not have done any of that. I should have just complete waste of time. Kept it simple.
Now my back hurts.
Exactly.
All right. So you say alignment stick is number one, and I agree. And that's something that you just never think of, especially if you are going to a practice session. Most golfers, and whether you're low handicap or high handicap, I don't think this is specific to either or. They just go out to hit balls, to loosen up, to feel the ball contact the club, to make sure that they're doing the right things. They're not actually out there for the full practice session trying to figure things out. And the guys that are, especially the guys at Topgolf that are doing that, come on.
Who's doing that?
Most people. There's a lot of people that are out there doing weird things, with their takeaway, and they're trying to figure things out at Topgolf.
Okay.
But the people that are at the driving range, the alignment stick is one. Two would be just knowing the yardage of the flags.
Yeah.
Right? Which I think is something that most people don't think of. They see all the flags out there and they see them as targets. Mm-hmm. But in reality, they are showcasing how far your clubs go. And knowing your yardage of your clubs to a 5 to 10 yard or maybe 5 yard degree is paramount in some cases.
For sure. Depending on your level of ability, that could swing a little bit, but you need to at least have an idea of how far you're hitting every one of your clubs when you make good contact. So,
in putting, there's the that invisible line. So there's a line on your putter, right?
Yep.
And somebody told me once you're supposed to take an imaginary line from that putter to the hole, or to your target line if it's a moving putt. There are training aids now that have actual like mirrors and these prisms and these things that you can use. Are those helpful if putting is a weak spot in your game, which in most it is, i.e. DeChambeau?
It might be. For me personally, I actually take a little bit different approach to putting. And that is, I think people don't focus enough on hand-eye coordination with putting. It's like playing pool or darts or anything that's like hand-eye coordination. You should be concentrating on getting your hands to hit the ball where your eyes are looking. And to me, that's the, there aren't a lot of tools that can train that other than, you know, just visualizing the line that you're trying to hit the, that you're trying to hit the ball on. But, for me personally, a lot of what I do with like practicing putting is I'm trying to make sure that I'm hitting the spot that I'm, that is my line, that my line's on.
And that's the other thing too, that, and not to turn this into a lessons, discussion, but
yep.
I think it's important to know if you are practicing
and
you're trying to get better, that the, all the science, data points, technology, all of that, you can throw that out the window and you can just pick a spot and then hit to it.
Right.
And, but most players don't pick that spot. They pick the line. They
kind of look at, they're looking at a general area. They're not really trying to pick out a specific point to hit. And it's, that's part of the problem I think a lot of people run into is they're not really focusing on a point. They're,
What about that point right in front of, like maybe a foot in front of you?
Yeah, that makes it easier because you're not trying
to. So explain
that. So if you're trying to hit a point that's further away from you as opposed to closer to you, your hand-eye coordination is going to be able to hit that line that's closer to you than the one that's further away most of the time.
And hand-eye coordination is not something that you ever think about outside of hitting the ball, that you're, you know, you've just got everything in sync. Yep. Putting is 100% an in-sync motion where you need to have everything aligned properly. Right. That's another. Can you, alignment sticks in putting?
Yeah, I mean, those help. You definitely want to make sure that your body's square to the target line.
That was always my problem. My
and a lot of people,
my shoulder would close up every single time.
And keeping your body quiet. That's one thing that
that's a problem for me.
Don't do.
I'm gonna be honest with you.
Especially see it in higher handicap.
Being quiet for me.
Well, yeah,
it's a problem.
We know, Adam. Everyone knows.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that, and everybody does know. Well, I mean, what do you want from me?
Your wife especially knows.
Yes, she does. She does. And anybody within 100 yards of me.
Yep.
All right, hack rule question. We're in the clubhouse now. We're in the home stretch here of the Stick and Hack Show. I'm talking with the club champion, Mike Ryan, also known as the Stick. I got about a month left of that. Okay.
Well.
And then the party's going to be over. Yeah. And we're looking
at
next season.
We'll have moved on, yeah.
Right. All right. Hack rule question. What is proper mulligan etiquette?
Okay.
So,
okay.
In your opinion, is the mulligan a thing? I mean, what do you feel about it? If you're playing golf with people that aren't at your caliber, and they take a mulligan somewhere in the course, what's your reaction?
It depends on the spirit of what we're playing for. If it's just for fun and we're just playing around, I don't care if anybody takes a mulligan wherever they want. I actually prefer they would, just so that they can get out there and practice and get the feeling of hitting a good shot. If we're playing for money or it's in competition, no.
Right. So even that
outside of like, okay, we go up, you know, we may be playing for money. First hole, you get a breakfast ball, but outside of that.
Automatic two off the tee. So when.
But everyone knows that up front. It's not like, you know,
so somebody, some guys flying in from a business meeting. Yep. He hasn't hit a ball in 2 weeks.
Coming in hot.
And he's like, "Hey," he's texting you, you know, minutes before, "I'm on my way." Yep. So you got to wait and you got to let somebody through. It's a whole ordeal. You're like, "Oh, good. Trent's here. Perfect. Thanks for showing up, bud." And then he hits one 16 feet to the right. And then he's like, "Hey," and you say, "Hey, hit another one."
Yep.
No problems there.
Nope.
Eighth hole, you're playing for $5 Nassau.
Yep.
Okay. You got $5 in the front, $5 in the back, total $15, okay, not a big deal, but you're still playing for money. And some guy and gets up to the eighth hole, hits a shot into the water, okay, just lays the sod over it, chunks it right into the water, and then he says, "I'm gonna take my mulligan," and he pumps another ball down.
What mulligan?
Right. So you'll say, "I'm sorry,
I don't think we discussed this prior.
Did you buy string at the front office?"
Now,
as well?
If you set it out up front and say, "Okay, you can have one mulligan."
Anywhere he wants.
It can't be mid round.
It happens
suddenly.
A lot.
I know.
And it's my favorite is when they hit. So I'm just gonna, you know, they hit a crappy shot.
Yeah.
And then they say, "I'm gonna hit another one for practice," and then that lands about 3 inches from the hole. And they go, "I'll take my mulligan." Really, shocking.
Convenient. Convenient for you
that you have decided right then to take your mulligan. you have no problem with mulligans. I mean, they're mulligans in
life,
right?
If they're agreed to amongst your group and it's not a larger like tournament or something like that, that it's going to affect other people, I don't care.
All right, so I disagree. The only reason I disagree is that I think it should just be, hey, you get two balls off the front tee, and then you get an auto two putt on the first green, and then you play your game.
I mean, that's typically what auto two putt. I've never done that one.
Oh, well, play with me more often. Or maybe listen to my rules. Okay, the club champ doesn't know everything.
I don't know about the auto two putt.
Yeah, but auto two putt on the first hole, because you can. That way, you're not starting out with a 3 or 4 banger.
I mean, they have a putting green. You know that, right?
Yeah, and I don't go to the putting green because that's stupid. Okay, that is a waste of time. I'm not all of a sudden going to learn how to putt.
You know, get your game face on, man.
Hack wrote an article on that, stickandhack.com, specifically about. Practicing putting minutes before you tee off. Right. No, auto two putt. So those are the local rules. Those are your buddy's rules, where you say, hey, it's two off the tee and auto two putt, so that you can get off the first hole in a good space.
Okay,
that's it. Because you don't want anyone's round wrecked with an 8 or a 9 on hole one, right?
What if they do all of those things and they still have a 9?
Well, then they should quit the game. They should sell their clubs in a rummage sale. And buy a pony. I don't know what to tell you. that's just the way it is.
All right, fair enough.
All right, stickandhack.com for more stories as we continue the most sophisticated golf show in the free world. And next episode, we have a special guest. We're going to talk golf psychology, Mike. It's going to be specifically around the mental game of golf, which, as you know, is my sore spot. And most people's sore spot, right?
Definitely. I know it's yours. I witnessed it.
Thank you.
Firsthand.
Thank you. Day 2.
Day 2.
Are we going to talk about that every single episode? I can't talk about your club champion, but we're going to talk about my...
Hey, it goes both ways, man.
My absolute meltdown.
This is the dynamic we're working with.
Wow, it sucks. I'll tell you that right now. Stickandhack.com for more show and more videos as well. And sign up for The Break, which is our weekly newsletter bringing you the stories of golf like nobody else can. And find us on social at Stick and Hack. This is The Stick and Hack Show. Mike Ryan, Adam Grubb. You guys have a great week.
Peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.